Kingway, Spock's beard, look, his action very weird. Captain Pike, Sisko's wife, Klingons and the afterlife. Boimler, Tendi's dog, Ransom is very harsh. Spore drive, Black Alert, Giorgio has gone berserk. DJ Batliff, Edward is an idiot. Spock is dead, Worf is wed, Chekhov's wearing red. Data's cat, Kempak's at, Q has had enough of that. Beam me up, make it so, everybody let's go.
We hung about this series. You can join us live by picking up your phone now. We talk about this series. We're coming to you on your streaming services now. We talk about this series.
Well, good evening, Trekkies and Trekkers around the globe. It is Thursday, June 8, 2023. It is 7:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time, which means we are live, which means you can let your fingers do the walking and call Trek Talking right now at 646-668-2433. And you're definitely going to want to put us on speed dial and give us a call because we have a great show planned for you tonight. We have with us the one and only Chris Naylor, who's a stuntman on Star Trek Picard Season 3, and he's going to be along with us to answer all your questions and tell us some nice behind-the-scenes dirt on what actually happens on the show, how they go into making all those great action scenes that we enjoy. So you're definitely going to want to give us a call at 646-668-2433. Before we get too far, though, I want to introduce my awesome Trexperts. We're down two tonight, but that's okay. We have with us our very own Charles. Charles is out in Las Vegas. How you doing, Charles?
Oh, Charles. Sorry, I'm distracted
Charles,
by the birds in the background. I lost a little bit because it sounds like there's birds out there chirping away.
Must be Jim. Are you sitting outside, Jim?
Not in these smokes, not in these forest fires.
I'm doing all right. Enjoying our crazy weather as usual. Yeah, we should be high 90s. Doesn't explain why we're hitting high 80s for the last 2 days. But, well, I'm enjoying it while we can.
Yeah, well, the smokes from these fires are really, really bad here.
When I say the smoke is usually bad here in Vegas from the fires, now Jim understands what I mean by that.
Yeah. Pretty bad. And we also have with us Eric. Eric is out in Portland. How you doing tonight, Eric?
Man, I am doing great, although I guess I'm feeling the weight of having to represent the entire Portland consortium all by myself. But I think I can get it done.
Yeah, just like the good old days. We always got it done. We're like the three musketeers.
It's true. It's so true.
And as of right now, guys, we have 124,874 downloads of this podcast, so thank you so much. And we have 143,322 followers on our Facebook page. And speaking of our Facebook page, if you guys would like to hear your name mentioned in a fan shout-out, just visit our Facebook page. And Eric, how's the easiest way for our fans to get to our Facebook page?
Well, you know, perhaps not the easiest, but the funnest way would probably be to actually write your name and address and social security number on a piece of paper, fold it nicely, preferably in some sort of style of origami, slide it into an envelope, put 14 stamps on it, and then mail it to Jim, and he may or may not read it. Now, if that one doesn't work for you, you can always just go to trektalking.com and access not only our Facebook page, but you can also send us a message right down there in the lower right-hand corner. You can click the little microphone. It allows you to actually record a message to us. Tell us where you're from. Tell us why you listen. Tell us everything you like about Trek. And, you know, we'd love to play your snippet on the air here. But yeah, that's probably the easiest way. Although the first way I think sounds a lot more fun. Don't you think so, Jim?
Oh, you could beam yourself over here too. That's always doable.
Well, that'd be pretty cool. That'd be pretty cool. As soon as they invent a teleporter, I'm there.
So if you do reach out to us through our Facebook page, all you have to do is look for a heart next to your name from yours truly, Uncle Jim, and then you want to tune in to the next podcast because your name is going to be featured for all of eternity. Everyone's going to know that you're not only a Shrek fan, but you listen to this podcast. So, Eric, you want to get us started with our fan shout-outs this week?
I absolutely do. I'm going to spin that globe, and we're going to head down to the very southern tip of Africa and say hello this week to Jacques Aylward, who's saying hello to us from South Africa. Thank you, Jacques. You are not the first from South Africa to say hello, but there's not many of you there. So thanks for supporting us, and thanks for spreading the word all the way down there on the tip of that continent. I can't wait to visit there someday. Thank you so much. Also saying hello and sending out a big shout-out this week to Ferry Lawrence, who's saying hello from Sydney, Australia. Good day, mate. That's right. We've got a lot of supporters down there in Sydney. And, Ferry, you are one of them. Perhaps you know some of our other supporters. Thank you so much for listening to us, and live long and prosper to you. Billy Bat, we'd love to say hello to you all the way over across the pond in London, England, one of my favorite cities to visit. Billy Bat, thank you so much for listening to us over there. And in this first set, my last fan shout-out goes out to Jim Hillis, who's listening to us from Belfast in Northern Ireland, right there on the same group of islands just across the pond. And Jim, man, I cannot wait to visit there someday. I've never been to Ireland, but it looks amazing, and Belfast looks like a super cool city. Thank you so much for listening to us. Charles, I'm pretty sure you're going to want to spin that back over to this hemisphere, right?
Yep, but not quite the States. Let's start off with Luis Hernandez. A big hello from Mexico City. Welcome, Luis. I've actually been in your city when I was younger. Top fan, Roy Jane Matthews from Alamo Town, Texas. Oh, let's hear it for the Alamo. Sean Allenday from Atlanta, Georgia. Welcome from Atlanta. And top fan, Dennis Colby from Tucson, Arizona. Dave's not here again. All right. Angela Grant from Texas. Okay, Texas, New York City. I live on the ocean in Oregon for a while. Okay, I guess she's listening multiple places. I didn't realize there was I don't think there's a Texas in New York. Or maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Jim knows. Welcome.
I think what she's saying is that she's currently in Texas. She was in New York City, and she also lived in Oregon by the ocean. I think that's what Angela's saying.
Okay. All right. I hope so, because I was going to say, I didn't realize there was a Texas in New York. But welcome to Jim J. Hanks, Jr. from Jacksonville, Florida, up in Mark B. Lee's neck of the woods. Manna Rose from Las Vegas, but currently in Tennessee. I don't know if you ever got around the USS Las Vegas, but welcome, Manna. And Teresa Giles Gunn from Utah. Oh, I wonder which part of Utah. We've got a lot of us who travel up the southern tip. Paul/Eric, who's on your list?
Well, I would try and do my best Paul impression, but I'm not good at accents at all, so I'm just going to stay in Eric mode and say hello this week to Petra Mayer, who's saying hello to us from Vienna, Austria, sending us a little live long and prosper hand, as well as an Austrian flag. Petra, thank you so much for listening to us, and live long and prosper, peace and long life to you. Dana Erka Doskova is saying hello to us from the Czech Republic today. Dana, oh my gosh, thank you so much for listening to us from that part of the world. Another place that I have not yet visited that I would love to. And thanks for carrying that Trek Talking flag all the way over there in the Czech Republic. Also saying hello and sending out a big shout out this week to Joel Berner, formerly from New England and New York, now in Davao City, Mindanao in the Philippines. Joel, once again, we've had a couple of listeners here and there from the Philippines, but not a whole heap. So thank you so much for listening to us all the way over there. Kapla to you, sir. And as well, we're saying hello this week to Johan Petru Kaluva Dam, who is listening to us from the Faroe Islands. And you say, where the heck is that? And I say, well, the clue was given with the flag. It's in Finland. Johan, thank you so much for listening to us over there in Finland. And Jim, I know you want to bring it back stateside and close out these shout-outs.
Absolutely. I want to say thank you to David King, who's listening to us in Oklahoma. I want to say thank you and kapla to top fan Jimmy Jackson, who's listening to us in southern Indiana. Top fan just means you interact with us a lot on our Facebook page, and we really appreciate that. I also want to say thank you and kapla to top fan Jeff Richardson, who's listening to us in Virginia Beach, Virginia. And last but definitely not least, another top fan, Lisa Kowalski-Homing, who's listening to us in New Jersey. And that wraps up our fan shout-outs for tonight, guys. If you'd like to be on our fan shout-out, go over to our Facebook page and just tell us where you're listening from. Look for a heart next to your name from yours truly, Uncle Jim, and tune into the next podcast to hear your name. All right, guys, our phone number here is 646-668-2433. We'll be live for the next couple of hours. So please let your fingers do the walking and call Trek Talking, because we have a great show. We have with us live in the studio Chris Naylor. And Chris is a stuntman, writer, and producer. He's best known for his work on Star Trek Picard Season 3. Well, that's why we have him here. But he's done a lot more. He's been a stunt double for a very long time. He worked on Luke Cage, Defenders, 911 Lone Star, Jumanji the Next Level, Westworld, Cobra Kai, Doom Patrol, and Runaways, just to name a few of his impressive credits. You can ask him anything you want about any of those shows, including Star Trek, by calling right now, 646-668-2433, and we will get you on the air with Chris. Chris, how you doing tonight? Welcome to the podcast.
Good, guys. Thank you so much for having me, man. I got to give a shout out. My first job ever at Universal Studios Florida. My first stunt doubling job ever was stunt doubling as Arnold Schwarzenegger in the Terminator 2 3D Battle Across Time. That was my first job ever.
That's so cool.
Yeah. I'm not sure if you guys ever saw that show at Universal Studios, but it was a kick-ass stunt show that was really like a great way for audiences to interact with a live show in 3D technology for 1996. And then I think it finally closed in around maybe 2009 or 10 or something. But that was a great show, and that's what got me started in the business. So huge shout out to them over there.
I was so impressed with that. I had to go back and see it a second time because I was so blown away by it the first time. It was like something I'd never experienced before. And I was just like, wow, if they can make movies like this, oh my God.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I thought it was a really cool little sequel as well to T2. And once they started making more movies, I guess it kind of came outdated. So.
Yeah, but it was so awesome while it lasted.
Oh, yeah.
So
yep.
Let's dive right in, Chris, and let's talk about Star Trek. Let's do the Trek right off the bat. So obviously the first question that I'm going to ask you is the same question I asked Earl, and that, of course, is, were you a Star Trek fan before you got the part?
100%. My dad showed me Star Trek as a kid, and I just fell in love with it. There was something about it that kind of I was way more interested in Star Trek than I was Star Wars for some reason. Maybe it was, you know, the world that Gene Roddenberry created, to where, you know, we all kind of, you know, we're under the United Federation of Planets, and we're all getting along, and, you know, there are enemies out there, but for the most part, the planet Earth has had made first contact with aliens, and we were working together to, you know, build better worlds and seek out new life, new civilizations and everything. And I don't know what it was, but there was just something about the original movies that I saw with the original cast and crew from the 60s. And I just really fell in love with it. My dad and I used to watch all the movies like just back to back, and from, you know, Star Trek, the motion picture, to Star Trek VI. And then when the next generation came out, my dad said, oh my gosh, my dad was so excited because he was such a Star Trek fan. And when that came out in, you know, what was it? 87, 88. And he got me hooked on that. And I just, every day after school, it was already in syndication, and I just enjoyed everything about Star Trek.
Now, you stunt doubled for Captain Shaw and Captain Riker on Picard, correct?
That is correct. I was first contacted by my stunt coordinator friend, Guy Fernandez. He was the stunt double for Luke Cage on Luke Cage Season 2, which I also worked with my friend who was stunt coordinating Luke Cage, Matt Mullins. And when Guy Fernandez started stunt coordinating Picard, he brought Matt Mullins to be his fight coordinator, and then they brought me in to stunt double, and we all kind of had like a nice little reunion from working on Luke Cage. So worked out perfectly, and we all got to hang out again, and they knew how much of an avid Star Trek fan I was, which is why they were excited to bring me on too.
Now, Chris, when you walked on the set of Picard, were you aware of how special it was and actually what it meant to have the entire cast back together for the first time in over 20 years?
Dude, I'm not lying, man. I got goosebumps. The first set that I walked onto was the Beverly Crusher's ship, you know, from the start of episode one. I forget the name is forgetting me right now. I'm sure you guys know it, but that ship, it was such a it was so cool seeing it because it was the technology from, you know, the Next Generation series, and I was just like, oh, here's this, and oh, here's that. And, you know, my friends who were working with me as well, they didn't really know what I was talking about, and they're just like, what are you talking about? I'm just like, oh, gosh, you have no idea what we're in for.
Did you get beamed at all when you were on the show? Did you get the transport?
I never got beamed, but I did get disintegrated.
Oh, okay. Well, that's just as good.
Yeah. One day they needed me to play as some fans are calling the aliens, the bird people, you know, the ones with the beaks. I got to play one of the ones that is attacking Beverly Crusher in the beginning of the season. I'm one of the ones that come onto the ship, and she eventually disintegrates both of us. I was one of those creatures.
Wait, you got killed by Gates McFadden?
I did.
Oh, living the dream. Living the dream.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing.
I also saw a picture of you getting killed as a Ferengi. Am I correct?
No, see, so I was killed by Worf. So I was my human form, and they originally had me on the call sheet as a human because we had three other stunt guys there who were, I believe they were Vulcan and Romulan, and then they had me as a human. But then when I saw the final cut and you see Worf's batleth go through me, it's green. I have green blood. So I'm just like, well, what happened there? They didn't put any ears on me, but maybe I had a Vulcan look to me. I don't know.
That's weird.
Quinn kill you? Did Quinn kill you as Worf, or did Michael Dorn kill you as Worf?
No, that was Quinn. That was Quinn kill me. That was stunt, all stunt double work with that action and that fight choreography. All stunt double work, and then you zoom in. They I think the next day was when they actually filmed Worf carrying out Raffi.
Wow. So you got killed by Quinn. Quinn killed you.
Yes.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's really neat. So when you were stunt doubling for Captain Shaw, Did you actually do his death scene when he gets killed by the board? Was that you?
Yeah, that was me doubling that day. Surprisingly enough, except for the big explosion that rocked the Titan and sent Shaw flying across the room and he busted up his leg, Shaw pretty much, for the most part, did a lot of his own stunts. So that was actually him dying. I was there that day dressed, you know, in case he didn't want to do it. But he was pretty much doing all of his own death scenes. I think he really wanted to do it as well, you know, for the sentimental value.
Wow. Now I'm wondering, when they killed him off, did you guys feel the same way about him that we did when they killed him off? I mean, were you as shocked as us?
Absolutely. I mean, he was so loved by not only the cast and crew and, you know, the producers, but as I'm watching the show, I'm realizing how much, like, fanfare he's getting. The fans loved him.
Oh yeah, we didn't like him at first. At first we didn't like him, but by the end we loved him. You know,
you always know when somebody opens the way that he did that there's something underlying the surface there, right? That was the best part about him, was you kind of knew right from the beginning that he wasn't really a dink, but that we still had something to discover about why he was a dink.
Yeah, I think he had one of the best character arcs in Star Trek history, really, when you think about it. He starts off as this character who's the one that's in the way of Riker and Picard and everybody, and we're like, oh god, this guy is such a, you know, he's going to be a problem. And then you start realizing why he is the way he is, and I think everyone starts feeling for him, and then he kind of comes around. He defies orders as well, and he's just like, okay, this guy kicks ass. He's a warrior.
Yeah, he's a dipshit from Chicago, as what he said.
That's right. Yeah, but I love that. I love when you first meet him. He's there eating a steak, and he's just like Mr. Macho, and he's just like not. It's Captain Picard and Riker. Like, have some respect. He's just like, no. He's just like, you guys. I've read about what you've done, and you know your adventures, and you know that whole line. And he was just like, man, he's really giving it to him. He does not give a crap.
No, and as fans, we picked up on that, and we did not like him. But by the time they killed him, things were different.
Big time.
We really fell in love with him.
Yeah, like I said, I think Terry Metalis did an excellent job. I don't want to say the word saving this show, because I think the first two seasons weren't as good as this season. I'm sure you guys can agree with me there.
Right. Now, Chris, did you know what was going to happen beforehand, or did you learn to have the story unfold for you as you went along?
Yeah, it was kind of a bummer, because I really wanted to watch the show, and I'm sitting there reading my sides, you know, I'm not sure if you guys know this, but they give you what's called sides at the beginning of your day, to where you read the scenes that are being shot that day. And I'm reading the script and just these scenes that we're shooting, and I'm just like, oh man, oh wow, so this is the, oh gosh, so it actually is the Borg. Oh no, okay. I'm like, no, I'm like, come on, like, spoiler. Yeah. So I was a little upset that I just got the biggest spoiler of, you know, the season.
But I mean, that must be a thing all the time in your line of work, though, right? You're like not necessarily insulated from that.
Yeah, no, it's very true. Like, you know, working on like some Marvel stuff recently, you know, you kind of find out, you know, what's going on before it hits the news, and you're just like, oh wow, really? Okay, like. Shoot, okay. Like, it happened when I was working on She-Hulk. I did some days on She-Hulk, and you find out that Daredevil's coming back. It's like, oh, what? Like, man. All right.
So you knew about Jack Crusher and the Borg like ages before the rest of us.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. And I couldn't say a thing to anybody.
Wow, that's
yeah.
Wow, talk about spoilers. Wow.
We are the Borg.
Wow. Yeah.
Lower your shields and surrender your ships. We will add your biological and technological distinctiveness to our own. Your culture will adapt to service us. Resistance is futile.
Pretty
much. That's exactly how I felt. That's exactly how I felt, you know.
So, did you also know who they were going to bring back to play the Borg Queen as well?
You know, I didn't actually, because, you know, Annie Wershing played her in season two, they had Annie Wershing
yep.
playing her. And then I thought she was great, you know, and then we had no idea she had cancer. Like how about that spoiler? Like that, we were like, so
yeah.
when we
yeah.
found that out, we were so like, me and my buddies who worked on the show were like, did you guys know? And we were like, no, we had no idea. Apparently she had it all throughout filming. You know,
we were stunned when we heard that, and I thought it was very tasteful that they dedicated the first episode to her.
Yes, very, very tasteful. Yeah, it was.
That was,
and yeah. So I didn't know what they were. I honestly didn't know that they were bringing back blah 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 blah.
Alice Kreege.
Yes, Alice Kreege. Until I saw the show. So they kept that under wraps from all of us. And because I wasn't there the day that they shot her scenes. I think they did it. They may have done it all like remote or on green screen or something. And I only worked on the board ship doubling Riker that last scene with him and Worf when the two Borg awaken and they have to fight them. So I was Riker's double on that day, and that's when that was the day that I found out that the Borg was behind everything.
We'll call that day no.
Exactly. And then I show up on the Borg ship, and you know, believe it or not, they did so well, the construction crew and the art department, they did so well building these corridors for these ships. You know, it was only like the main room of the Bridge of the Titan, and then they had like a corridor that they kind of used and just used it in repeat, and that was about it for the sets. And then they had another set for the Borg ship on another stage. And that was literally one corridor with a little rounded corner. That was, you know, once you rounded that corner of the corridor, it was only about maybe 8 feet of room. And then they just used that same set again and turned the cameras around to make it another area of the ship. So it was very small, as big as it looked. And then you get in that bigger room where the Borg Queen was, and that was actually a big room. But for the most part, It was so small. They condensed so much on those sets, and it was actually a lot. It was tough to fight and do some of the choreography and stunts. And we had to, I think, cut some of the stuff because Michael mostly, when he was using his sword to fight the Borg, it was very tight in there. So we had to cut a lot of the choreography. So Matt Mullins, our fight choreographer, had a lot more cool stuff for him to do, but we just couldn't in that tight space. And but I think what we shot came out really cool.
So when you were on the Borg ship, did Quinn as Worf get to kill you as a Borg as well?
No, I was never a Borg, but a couple other guys who were also other characters in the show or doubling or just regular goons dying, they were Borg for that scene. So they got killed a couple of times in the show as well.
So were you working on set when Jonathan Frakes was directing? And if so, what was it like to be directed by him?
Okay, here's my – can I talk about my first time meeting Jonathan Frakes?
Absolutely.
So Guy Fernandez, our stunt coordinator, he knows I'm a big fan. He knows that I have all of the action figures from the Next Generation, the original suits, you know, and I told him, I was like, man, I got to get them to sign these action figures my dad gave me. It would just be, you know, a blessing because, you know, my dad gave me these back in 1991, and he said, keep these in the box. It's going to come in handy one day. And then 30 years later, or a little less than 30 years later, wow. I'm on set of Star Trek Picard with the Next Generation cast, and it's Jonathan Frakes is prepping his episode that I'm going to be in, doubling Shaw, where Shaw gets blown across the room. And Guy Fernandez calls me up. He says, hey, come to set, or come to the stages. You know, I live down the road from the stages at Santa Clarita Studios. So I jet down there. He's like, bring your little toy. Or, and I'm like, well, what you want? I've got eight of them, you know? He's like, bring Riker. And I'm like, okay. I'm like, oh, my God. So I'm like sweating bullets. I get there, and I come up to the stunt coordinator's office, and he's like, all right, follow me. He's like, Frakes is, you know, at his office. So I get there, and he's like, Frakes, I got to introduce you to your stunt double. And Frakes looks at me, and he goes, this handsome devil. He's like, you did well, Guy. You did well, you know. And he's a big kid, you know. He gets up. He shakes my hand. He's like, how you doing? He's like, you're a really handsome man. I'm glad that you're doubling me. And, you know, he's fun, you know. He is. And then he looked at this action figure. He goes, oh, no, what do you got there? And I went, well, hear me out. I was like, I got this when I was about 11, 12 years old. You know, my dad gave it to me. You know, he's passed away now for about 10 years now. And it would just mean the world to me if you signed it, because I think it's, you know, honoring him. And he's like, oh, he's like, well, I can't say no to that. He's just like, sit down. He's like, well, when he started talking to me about my dad a little bit, and it was really nice. And he's like, well, who should I make it out to, you or your dad? I'm just like, oh man, that's a tough question. I was like, well, I think my dad would want you to make it out to me. And he's just like, all right, good. You know, so that was my first time meeting him. And then I was doubling him on a day where it was not a big stunt. I think it was a day where he was being brought on board to meet Amanda Plummer's character, and he was being pushed around by that big old, you know, strapping alien. I forget the name of those aliens, the bird people, the big people. But I didn't end up doing anything because he did all of his own stunts there. I think he gets punched by him, but. Yeah, so I doubled him on that. But then as I'm meeting him, he goes, actually, you'd be a great Shaw double too. And that's how I got the job doubling Shaw, and he was directing that episode. And when I did that stunt of Shaw flying across the room, it was – I mean, we rehearsed it, you know, one day about 3 days prior, and we did it with, you know, pads and the wire work and everything. We timed it out, did it well, and we just showed up on the day. And they come up to me and they're like, hey, Frakes wants to do this take just once. And I'm like, all right, cool. They're like, all right, don't mess it up. No pressure. So he's in there. He's in his vibe. He's like, yeah, you're looking this way. Then you're looking that way. And then it shoots you. And then your explosion happens, and you got to hit this console here, and it's going to bust up your knee. And I'm like, all right, great. Let's do it. I did it in one take. Boom. He comes out. And he goes, oh, your leg is gone. That leg's gone. He's like, you're almost dead. Yeah, that leg's gone. He's like, let's move on. That was a great take. he's such an animated guy. He's really into directing, and he lets you know it. And it was a lot of fun.
So one take nailer, is that what we can call you now?
I think my boss called me one take nay-nay because my last name is N-A-Y, you know. So
there you go.
Yeah, one take, nay-nay. Yeah, so it was good. It was a good one. Really good stunt. Good for my stunt reel, and it's on there already. And yeah, I had a lot of fun with that one.
Since you brought up Captain Shaw, Todd Stashwick, when he landed the role of Captain Shaw, you know, mm-hmm. was he a fan, and what was he like on the set?
I think he was. You know, I didn't get to talk to him too much because he was so into this role, and I think he liked that just as an actor in general. But I don't know if you guys follow him, but he is a big nerd, you know, and like he's awesome. He has like D&D nights. I think he does Magic the Gathering, all this stuff. He is really cool in that aspect, but I didn't get a chance to talk to him that much just because he was really into this role. He was memorizing his lines a lot, but I do, after following him on social media, I saw that he is one of us. And I think I do believe that he is an avid Star Trek fan.
Well, I know that he is because the first episode where you met him, where we all hated him, and he had a tweet of him at the table with Riker and Picard. And I said, well, look, Riker, Picard, Seven, and Captain Shaw, someone's not walking out of that room alive. Well, he texted me back at the end of the episode. Well, he didn't text you, but he tweeted. He said, guess who's still alive?
Oh, like, that's great.
Wow, that is so cool. He read it, and he answered me. And I was like, that just impressed me that he took the time to do that. And it impressed me.
That's
like,
so
wow.
Cool. I hope he listens to this. That'd be awesome.
I was like, that is really cool. Well, Eric, yeah. Do you have any questions you want to ask Chris? Because I can babble on for the rest of the night.
Do I have any questions? Do we have enough time in this podcast? Of course I have questions. Yeah, absolutely, Chris. It's been so cool to hear you kind of get warmed up here. One of the reasons we love having guys like you on the podcast is that we love to hear all the inside info, right? All the little stories that you won't even find on the internet, no matter how hard you Google. So we really appreciate that. I guess maybe since Jim has covered Trek pretty well, what I'll do is I'll pivot just a little bit. First of all, She-Hulk, that's not on your IMDb, so spoiler alert, I didn't know that you were in that. Where were you in She-Hulk?
You know, I was uncredited because I got called in to do reshoots. They needed to do some reshoots for some fight scenes, and I got called in only to do some previs work. And I'm not sure if you know what previs is, but it's you know, just the stunt people getting together and shooting a pre-visualization of the action scene that we're doing. And I was just called in because I was a big guy. I needed a big guy to emulate She-Hulk. So they didn't, I don't think they're putting me on IMDb because they don't want to see that a man, you know, stepped in to double She-Hulk.
Sure. Makes sense.
That's Disney's way of doing it. But that's a little insider scoop. You know what I mean? I don't mind sharing that at all because I don't think, you know, Disney's going to sue me for that. But that's pretty much what I did about a week and a half on that, or on those reshoots, and just pre-visualization. I was never on camera as a She-Hulk, or I was never in like a mocap suit or anything.
That's cool. But you're, you know, still involved in that creative process, right? You like without oh, you, yeah. The process wouldn't move forward. So, you know, whether or not
absolutely.
You get a screen credit, I think it's pretty cool that you're involved in that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So, obviously you've got, to your credit, Luke Cage, you did quite a few episodes. You've got 13 credits on there. You did some Marvel Runaways. So there you got 2 credits at least in the Marvel universe, maybe more. Then you got a little DC credit here and there. You got some Black Lightning, you got some Doom Patrol. So, as a nerd, number one, are you a comic guy?
Yeah, you know, I was growing up. I got the whole run of The Death of Superman, from The Death of Superman to his resurrection, and that whole series of The Man of Tomorrow and Last Son of Krypton and Superboy. I'm not sure if you guys remember that
oh,
run.
Yeah, for sure. I got all that stuff,
yeah.
Too.
Oh, yeah. So that was my favorite. And then I just started collecting them here and there, and I read them, and then I got into high school, and I got kind of out of it, you know, puberty hits, and you get into sports, and that's, you know, I kind of accrued my stunt work to being an athlete growing up as I got older, but I was still a nerd at heart, for sure.
So then you've done Marvel and DC. It sounds like you've mentioned one DC. Do you have a preference? Are you a Marvel or a DC guy, or you love both equally?
I tell you what, man, DC for sure. I mean, that's where my comic book fascination started. I was a big Superman fan. Loved Batman. It's still, those are the top two for sure. I hate to sound so cliche, but my wife's a big Batman fan as well. Our house is literally covered with, you know, either Batman or, you know, and well, we have a lot of cats too, so we have a lot of cat stuff up. But she actually, her license plate says Batman. You know, that's how much of a Batman fan she is.
Wait, so your wife can literally say, "I'm Batman"?
Exactly, and she does say that a lot.
I love it. That's so cool.
Oh yeah.
All right. Well, I love that. So yeah, I'm. There's a lot of, I guess, not competition. What is that? Friendly competition, I guess, out there. So yeah, DC guy. There you go. Thank you so much. And Jim already asked you if you were a Trekkie. So here's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna pivot back to your stunts, and I'm gonna say, what is the most dangerous or most interesting stunt that you have done so far in your career?
Let's see. The most interesting one was, I'll go back to 2019. I got to double the Hound from Game of Thrones on the Jumanji sequel. So that actor, Rory McCann, I got to double him and fight The Rock, which was pretty awesome.
Mm.
And it wasn't a crazy big fight scene, but I got to fight him, meet him, really nice guy. Me and his stunt double took a dive off of a 15-foot, platform and onto some pads. That was a lot of fun. And that was the coolest. And then I got to tell you, working on Star Trek was awesome. Like, doing that stunt for Shaw, that was a really, really great stunt for my stunt career. But just, you know, the sentimental value of being on a Star Trek set was really great. And then I have to go into today. I mean, right now, the job I'm doing right now, I'm stunt doubling Will Ferrell, which is an awesome accolade to my resume. So that's so it's really cool.
Wow. Your resume is just building and building right now. That sounds amazing.
Yeah. I feel like I'm kind of in my prime right now, which is awesome.
Well, that is why we have you here, my friend, because we are enjoying your work and we would like to celebrate it. Thank you so much for coming
on. Appreciate it, guys.
Yeah, let me ask you a couple more questions, and I'm going to pass you along to Charles here. So you were talking about the Borg sets, and I'm just curious, do they look as cool, up close as they do on screen, or do they, is there I can tell this is a set, when you're standing there in person?
No,
I'm just curious.
No,
yeah.
It looks like you're on a spaceship. It looks like you're on a Borg spaceship. It was so cool. And me being the Star Trek fan of the stunt crew, I was the one mostly in awe. Like, the other guys are just there for the job, and it's great, but it's, for me, I'm going oh my gosh, look, I'm inside a Borg cube right now. And they're like, cube? Like, what are you talking about, cube? I'm like, dude, are you guys are such dorks, man. Geez, God, why can't you get, I'm like calling them dorks for not knowing,
Right.
For them not knowing.
Because you're in charge when you're on the Star Trek set.
Exactly. And it was really cool to walk onto that set and be like, this is so cool. And then here's the icing on the cake. Seeing 1701D in person, I'm getting chills right now talking about it. But when I saw that, I had to sneak on stage to see that, by the way. So I was told by Matt Mullins, the fight coordinator, he's like, hey, go on stage 3 real quick and just peek in there. There's no one around right now. You can get in there and look. And I'm like, what? What are you talking about? She's like, just go. And so I get in there and I'm just like, I'm almost like blinded by the light. Has a feeling, and I go in there and I'm just like, no way. And so I'm like so scared. I snap a quick picture with my phone, but I'm like so worried about getting caught. I was like, I don't think I slept that night.
You're like, there were cameras, I'm sure.
Yeah, but that, you know, they were pretty cool. It wasn't like,
yeah.
I think they make you feel, they make you feel a little bit more scared when you're filling out the NDA and you're reading all that stuff. But for the most part, they're just like, eh, it's whatever, you know?
Well, they just don't want people to like ruin anything, right? That's the main concern.
No, yeah. I mean, you can't put it on social media. You can't send it to people and stuff like that, and because it'll get out. But I mean, I think people had an idea that it was coming anyway, just because they got the whole cast back and all, and they kind of announced the whole casting back pretty early. So I think people did have some kind of an idea, but it was really cool to finally see it in the show, and I brought it back. I thought it was really cool. I got to give credit to Terry Metalis, man. He really did awesome writing on that season.
Yeah, I don't think anybody on this podcast would disagree with you. All right, so last question before I pass you along. This is a very important headcanon question because we don't know the answer to this, and so we need you to concoct your best answer to this.
I'll try my best.
What did Worf do to the Enterprise E?
I don't know. Isn't that...
But what's your headcanon? What's your headcanon?
Oh, my gosh, man. I wish I knew. That's got to be something that Terry knows for sure. And he didn't tell me. Yeah, he didn't tell me. He didn't tell anybody. But maybe we'll get it in a future episode of Star Trek Legacies, if that's going to be a thing. Who knows? I know they're speculating, but I think that was the plan going ahead, was that they were really going to try to extend this Picard universe.
Well, I love it. We all really enjoyed Picard season 3. We all enjoyed the work that you did on it, which was amazing. And thank you so much for chatting with me. I'm going to pass you right along to Charles here. So Charles, take it away, buddy.
Well, Eric just caught one of my first questions.
No,
I was going to ask Pat if he got to see the 1701D.
Yeah, I did. And it was just, like I said, it was so surreal seeing it. And, you know, I saw it with nobody on the set, which was, I thought, kind of special. I wish I could have – I wanted to walk on it, but I didn't. I ended up seeing some pictures of people who actually sat in the chairs, and I was just like, oh, you bastards. I should have done it, you know. And I was too scared. I think it was just a lot of my childhood coming back to it. I was just shocked at the moment, so I had to just see it with my eyes. Take it in, and it's a memory that'll last with me for the rest of my life.
Oh, I can imagine. What's interesting, because you mentioned about two in one take with breaks, and it's like, okay, that's unusual, because we have so constantly heard the phrase two takes breaks.
Yeah, no, for sure. I've heard that too. He's been known for directing for quite some time now, and you know, and yeah, I've heard that expression as well, but this is my first time working with him. And I know that my stunt was such an intricate stunt to do, and they didn't really want to reset that whole set again. So we had to really dial it in and get it right in rehearsals. So it's important to get that done. Now, I think we did do a pickup shot of me actually having my leg hit the console, because they really wanted to emphasize that Shaw really messed up his leg. Yeah.
Well, you want to get – here's one that you probably laugh at with freaks. Okay, we're getting to the first Star Trek convention where they've actually been doing filming of Picard with season 1.
Mm-hmm.
He walks on stage, and you see the shirt. You see that his shirt, which says "I signed an A. I signed an NDA. Don't ask me."
That sounds about right.
Yeah. And you sit there talk about not being able to say stuff. But it was, I understand completely about you can't say anything.
Mm-hmm.
Because he and I got to go to Los Angeles on the world premiere pre-release of Picard season 1 when they released the first three episodes.
Oh, well, that's
awesome.
And
we walked out of that theater and said, there's so much we want to talk about, and we can't talk to anybody but those people in the room. It didn't happen.
Yeah, I think you broke up a little bit there at the end, but I think you said that you could only talk about it to the people who were in that room with you. And
that's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, I agree. It's so frustrating because you want to get so much out there. You want to, I mean, you even want to go on your Twitter and your fans and of the podcast, and you want to talk about it, but you can't. And I think that's the joy of what's.
It wasn't the point we couldn't, but nobody wanted to hear it. It's like, no, no, don't spoil it for me. Don't tell me what happened. I don't want to know. I want to be surprised. Like, okay, be surprised, but
yeah,
you're going to enjoy it.
Of course, that's all you can. That's all you can do is tell people to just wait and see it, and the anticipation will rise.
So fans out there, when you get that chance to get that preview before it actually gets released to the public, it's an interesting feeling to walk out of there thinking, I can't say anything. Because you don't get to see one episode. You may get two episodes. You might get three.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, no, I totally get it. Especially when it's something as cool as Star Trek. And
yeah,
I think it's the same way with all the Marvel stuff too, when you work on those things and, you know, you can't talk about it. And it's frustrating. I know, especially in the day that we live in with social media and everything. And that's why they do it. So yeah, I get it.
Well, Chris, is it in general, is it more fun to like to do it, or is it more fun to see the finished product? Is that a question you can even answer?
Yeah, well, it is a little bit of both. I think it's really fun to do it, but then again, like I said, being spoiled does suck. And then, but you don't see the whole process of it happening. You know, there were some scenes that I didn't see. Like I said, I had no idea that Alice Creed was the Borg Queen, and they brought her back, and I was surprised by that, but I knew that the Borg Queen was going to be there. I just didn't know how they were going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess they will toss it back over to Eric and Jim, see if they've got any last burning questions.
Thank you.
Well, actually, Chris, I have to ask you a question for my wife. You don't mind? She for some reason, she's afraid to come on the pod, but I don't get it. But
because she's been on the podcast before, Jim.
She'll pop her head in and tell me to take out the garbage, let in the dog, blah, blah, blah.
She will.
She won't talk on the podcast.
Yeah, I can relate.
I don't know. I don't get it. My wife is a huge fan of 911, and I noticed in your credits that you've been on the show. What can you tell us about 911 Lone Star? And what your part on it was?
Yeah, I was called by the stunt coordinator for season one. His name is Jim Vickers, and he was looking for an assistant to his coordinating. And I had some experience assisting the stunt department. And he called me up. He got my resume from somebody, and he just needed help coordinating the show and hiring people. And then when he met me, he was like, oh, wow, you'd actually be a really good Jim Parrick double. So I doubled Jim Parrick a couple of times on the show. And that was my stint on 911 Lone Star. I only worked season one because I don't think Jim worked the rest of those seasons. I think the show is still on, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. My wife's watching it right now.
Yeah. So I got to ride in the fire engine. That was kind of a dream come true too, because when you're a kid, you love firemen and fire engines. So got to ride in the fire truck. That was really cool. And that was a really, really fun show to be on for season one as well.
Yeah. My wife loves that show. She wanted me to ask you. So I did. I asked them, dear.
Yeah.
All right. She knows.
I got to do what the boss says.
Now she's got to listen to the podcast later to find out what he said.
Yeah.
That's right. She doesn't know what you said, and I'm not going to tell you.
Exactly. Sorry, you signed an NDA.
That's right. I can't talk. So, Chris, just amongst us here, no, there's no one else listening. You don't got to worry about it. But no one else is going to hear your answer to this question.
Okay.
But did you keep anything from the set? I remember, it's just amongst us guys here. No one else is going to hear you.
No, I didn't. You know, I got Frakes to sign my my action figure, and I got Michael Dorn to sign my action figure.
Oh, nice.
And I just was so mad at myself because I didn't know. Sometimes you don't know who you're going to be working with when you get the call that you're working a certain day, and you don't know until you show up. And I should have kept the rest of my action figures that I had in my car with me, but I show up to set one day and the entire cast is there.
Oh.
The entire cast. And they all have their, we're in between takes, and they all have their all their cast chairs are out, and they all come and they sit one by one at their cast chairs. There's, you know, Brent Spiner, there's LeVar, there's Michael, of course. I had already met Michael, and there's, you know, just everybody, you know, Marina and, you know, Gates. And I'm like, oh my God. It's like, I'm so dumb.
They're literally just lined up in a row.
They're literally lined up right there. Yeah. And I was so upset, but I'm grateful that I got Michaels and Frakes. And I did get to, I had a great little conversation with Patrick Stewart. Nice guy.
Now, Chris, are they as fun when they're together on set as they appear to be at conventions and things? Like, are they really that close?
Yeah, no, they are. They all sat down together. They all were chatting together. Like, they've just were, you know, coming back for another day. It was really cool to see.
Wow. And let me,
yeah,
since you work on the show, does it take any of the realism out of it when you watch, for instance, when the Titan gets attacked and Shaw flies across the bridge and you know that that's you, does that take you out of the show, or are you still able to enjoy it as a fan?
No, I still enjoyed the entire thing as a fan. I watched it from beginning to end, every episode. You know, a lot of stunt people will just be like, you know, oh, let me watch my scene, and that's that, you know. And I've had moments of like that, too, on shows that I don't watch that I worked on. But for the most part, when it came to the show, I watched beginning to end every episode.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Did you watch them live like the fans, or did you binge them all?
No, I watched them every week that they came on. Every week that they premiered a new episode, I woke up early that morning to watch it.
Wow, that is so cool.
Yeah.
I love to hear that, actually.
Yeah,
I really do.
Like I said, I was a fan, and I had high hopes for this season as well, because I think season one and two I did enjoy. Season one and two, but I didn't enjoy it as much as this season, for, you know, reasons known.
Oh, is there any chance that we might see you on, say, Strange New Worlds, for instance, or
I doubt,
you know,
it.
Any of the other shows that are coming out?
No,
or can
you
not
tell us? No, I can tell you. I know that they filmed those shows in Canada, Strange New Worlds and Discovery, and I think Discovery is about to end, isn't it?
But they
shoot those shows in Canada, and those are strictly Canadian stunt performers that work on those shows, just for, tax reasons. They need to have local stunt performers there.
Oh, interesting.
And I've recently moved to Atlanta, Georgia, because there's just a lot of filming going on here. So I'm not even in Los Angeles anymore.
Oh, wow.
Oh,
wow.
Neutral zone.
Yep, the neutral zone.
Yep,
exactly. All right, well, believe it or not, Chris, we've burned through our hour of time. That's hard to believe, isn't it?
It really is, man. It was a lot of fun talking to you guys about this because, you know, I'm not just a stunt man. I'm a Star Trek fan, so.
And you got to be on the boldest trek of all, the reunion tour, I guess you could call it.
Yeah, and like I said, incredibly grateful that, you know, it's weird because I didn't work season one or two, but I lived right down the road from where it was happening, and I kept bugging the stunt coordinator, who was my buddy, to get me on, and he said he couldn't do it this season because there was nobody for me to double or nothing for like a big, you know, 6'3", 6'4", you know, white guy. And finally, I, you know, season three comes around and, you know, Frakes is my height and Todd is about an inch less tall than me. And so I got to double them. And then I kept getting thrown into these other little small roles that I'm totally grateful for.
Well, we're definitely grateful for you and the Quinn both, because you guys are awesome and you're so much fun to talk to. And for us to find out that there's actually fans, people that love the show as much as we do, is just, it's awesome to hear that. So thank you so much.
Yeah. Like I feel, you're welcome, guys. And thank you so much for having me. This is really a dream come true. I went to my first convention with my dad, you know, back in 1994. And I got to meet James Doohan, and, you know, that was,
nice.
You know, that was really cool. He was at the convention in Florida that we went to. And then, you know, my dad getting me those figures, who knew that later.
Yeah. It's a small world, isn't it?
It really is.
Definitely.
It really is.
Well,
yeah.
thank you so much, Chris, for sharing some time with us and taking it out of your busy schedule to Trek Talk with us. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome, guys. Anytime, and I hope to see you at a convention one day.
Awesome, Chris. Thank you.
Here.
Thanks a lot, Chris.
Awesome.
Kapla.
Thank you, guys. Have a great rest of your show.
You too.
Thanks a lot.
Right. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
All right, guys, so that was Chris Naylor, and we've just finished up talking about Star Trek Picard Season 3, but guess what? We're not done yet. Oh, no, no, no. We still have our Star Trek birthdays to go through, which means we have to do this.
That was not a Klingon song.
All right, guys. We always start off our Klingon, or not our Klingon birthday.
Jim's got a one-track mind.
I've got Klingons on the brain. We always start off our Star Trek birthdays by remembering those members of our Star Trek family who, sadly enough, are no longer with us. And for that, we turn to Eric.
Yeah, Jim, tonight we have five members of our Star Trek community that we're going to be remembering. Our very first is actress Sally Kellerman, who we lost just last February 2022, at the ripe old age of 84 years old. She was the actress who portrayed Elizabeth Denner in the TOS first season episode, Where No Man Has Gone Before, also known as The Other Pilot. She's probably best remembered for portraying Major Margaret Hotlips Houlihan in the 1970 MASH movie. Different actress, of course, portrayed her in the television show Loretta Swit, you will remember. But Sally Kellerman was the original Hotlips. She was originally attracted to the performing arts after seeing Marlon Brando in the film Viva Zapata in 1952. And in the 1960s, prior to her actually becoming an actress, she started a singing career and actually had a recording contract with Verve Records at the time. She was only 18 years old. But because of stage fright, she was kind of unable to do performances. So she got the record deal, but could not actually do the performances. So eventually that deal lapsed, and she dove very deeply into acting. And she has a lot of acting credits to her name. You should go check it out, both television and movie stuff. One kind of interesting bit of trivia is that Grand Funk Railroad actually has a song called Sally, written by Mark Farner of the gang of the band, of course. And that song, Sally, is actually about Sally Kellerman. So if you didn't know that before, go listen to the song Sally by Grand Funk Railroad. Happy birthday, Sally Kellerman. We miss you. We love you. And thank you so much for being in Where No Man Has Gone Before. Also saying happy birthday this week to actor John Abbott. John Abbott lived to be 90 years old. He was an English actor who portrayed Aelborn in the TOS first season episode, Errand of Mercy. Now, listen, John Abbott was a very, very talented and prolific Shakespearean actor, theater actor. He worked steadily from the 1930s to the 1980s, amassing dozens of television guest appearances and movie roles, almost 150 in total. He was particularly active in the 1960s television scene with guest appearances in many of the shows of that era that we would typically mention. He was also a commercial artist when he substituted for a sick friend in an amateur production, which was seen by the actress Sybil Thorndike, who recognized his potential. That is actually how he got discovered. He was in several Shakespearean things from the 30s to the 40s to the 50s, broke out in Love's Labour's Lost and Twelfth Night, did some Hamlet along the way, made a couple of movies, but eventually appears in two Oscar Best Picture winners, Mrs. Miniver from 1942 and Gigi from 1958. If you haven't seen that movie, you should absolutely see that. When the war broke out in the 40s, he was attached to the British embassy in Stockholm, where he was in coding and decoding, and he actually was blacklisted in the 1950s as part of that whole situation there. But in his later years, he moved from acting into teaching acting, and many, many people learned from him. So very, very talented actor. John Abbott lost in 1996 at the ripe old age of 90 years old. We do miss you, John. Thank you for portraying Aelborn in Errand of Mercy. We're also saying happy birthday this week to Robert Lansing. He was the actor who played Gary Seven in the original series second season episode Assignment Earth. And I know you know who Gary Seven is. What a great episode. There was a whole comic book thing recently that we reviewed that included Gary Seven, so we kind of got to see Robert Lansing's visage revisited in the comics. I don't know if you guys know this or not, but that episode was actually supposed to be the pilot for a possible television series that would have starred Lansing as Gary Seven. But the series was not picked up. And personally, I feel like these days, if Gary Seven had showed up as a character, they would have spun off some sort of show about him. It just would have been super successful. Robert Lansing eventually kind of continued in that same vein in a lot of police detective, you know, that type of stuff. In the 1960s, he was in the 87th Precinct. He was in 12 O'Clock High. He was in The Man Who Never Was in 1966. He did some television, of course, as well. But then actually the first time I saw him, which I never really realized until later, was in 1985, where he became a regular cast member of the TV series The Equalizer. So if you saw the original Equalizer, he was on that show. In his later years, Lansing served as president of the Players, the New York City Theatrical and Literary Club on Gramercy Park, where his portrait still hangs. So happy birthday and lots of love and remembrances going out to Robert Lansing. Happy birthday as well to Bernie Terry Casey, who played Calvin Hudson. I always have a hard time saying that because my friend always says Hud Calvinson when we play attack wing. Calvin Hudson was in the Deep Space Nine second season episode, The Maquis Part 1, also the Maquis Part 2. He was one of those Maquis guys. You would recognize him if you saw him. He was not a Star Trek fan when he was invited to join the show, but the reason that he joined the show was because Avery Brooks was involved, and Casey had always wanted to work with Avery Brooks, so I think it's pretty cool that he admired him for his work on Spencer for Hire and A Man Called Hawk, and then eventually got to work with him on Deep Space Nine. Prior to becoming an actor, Casey was actually a professional football player. He played for the San Francisco 49ers from 1961 to 66, and played for the Rams from 67 to 68. He was also a very accomplished painter, and actually gave an interview at one point in his career as a pro football player while he was painting, which I just think is so cool. In that interview, he basically said that he was playing football for money, but that if he could paint for a living, he would do it. Wow. That's so cool. I absolutely would as well, my friend. He was an actor and director. He was in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, Never Say Again, and Revenge of the Nerds. He was the first African-American actor to play James Bond's ally, CIA agent Felix Leiter, in Never Say Never Again from 1983. So eventually became a very influential member of the Screen Actors Guild Union. Bernie Terry Casey would have had a birthday this week. Happy birthday, Bernie. Happy birthday as well to Jesse Lawrence Ferguson, who played Lutan in the Next Generation first season episode, Code of Honor. This is a deep voice actor broke into show business with a guest role on the popular television series Starsky and Hutch in 1979. And in that same year, he landed his first film role in The Onion Field. The majority of Ferguson's on-screen and television career took place in the 1980s. Among his roles are guest appearances on shows like The A-Team, Hill Street Blues. He was also in the 1987 film Prince of Darkness alongside Lisa Blunt, of course. He was in the 1984 movie The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai in the Eighth Dimension, which is a crazy movie if you haven't seen it before. And in 1990, he held the role as Eddie Black in the opening scenes of the film Darkman, which is one of my guilty pleasures. I just love that movie for some reason, and he's in it. He also, like, probably is best well-known other than his Cal Hudson stuff. Happy birthday. Happy birthday and lots of love going out to Bernie Terry Casey, who would have had a birthday this week. And our final remembrance this week goes out to Jesse Lawrence Ferguson, who played Lutan in the Next Generation first season episode, Code of Honor. Happy birthday to all of these folks. And those are our remembrances, guys. So, Charles, I'm going to pass that flaming birthday candle over to you for those of us, or those folks who are still with us that have birthdays this week.
Well, thank you, Eric. I'll start off with giving a happy birthday to Anthony T. Montgomery, actor from Indianapolis, Indiana, who played Ensign Travis Mayweather on Star Trek Enterprise, also portrayed as Mako Sergeant Mayweather. I saw also appeared in 97 episodes, also appeared in 130 episodes of General Hospital. Auditioned for a regular role on Star Trek Voyager. He did not get it, but was brought back to audition to play the part of Tuvok's son in Voyager's episode Repression. He did not get that role either, but was well remembered and brought to the audition for the lead in Star Trek Enterprise.
And Charles, I'll just say that I feel like Mayweather is one of those characters who always deserved just a little bit more on Star Trek Enterprise. I loved his character. You'll remember that he was a boomer which means that he actually grew up like around asteroids and stuff. So he had this whole thing where he was like used to zero G, and you know, he had a different relationship to space than any of the other guys who had come from Earth.
No, definitely. Happy birthday to Joan Pringle, New York born actress who played Rihanna Mayweather in Star Trek Enterprise's second season episode Horizon. Happy birthday to Nick Cox, played the role of Chazanka in Star Trek Next Generation second season episode Pen Pal, who also appeared in earlier times, 45 episodes, also in General Hospital, and also appeared in Terminator 2. Bonini Turpin, happy birthday, actress who played Swin in the Star Trek Voyager second season episode Tuvix and Resolutions. But I haven't listened to her. I don't know about Eric, but when I did a Google search, IMDb wasn't the first one that popped up. Her first pop-up was Audible.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, she is a very successful audiobook reader and has a lot of books under her name. She's very popular and very much in demand for her reading.
Yeah, she's got a great voice.
Happy birthday, Chad Allen, American actor who played Jono in Star Trek's Next Generation episode, fourth season episode, Suddenly Human. Interesting fact, when I looked him up, he was the autistic boy at the end of St. Elsewhere, the one who dreamed up the entire series. We're St. Elsewhere, and all of a sudden, like, this whole thing was a big dream. He was that little boy. He was also Charlie Brown. And Happy New Year, Charlie. Happy New Year, Charlie Brown. Only signed on for Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman, the pilot, to earn money for college. He didn't think the series would be picked up, even though it would pay for his college tuition as the season lasted 6 years. Interesting way to get your college tuition paid for of having an acting career that lasted having a series act that long. Happy birthday to James William Ercolini. Well, let's just call him James Darren. Actor, director, and singer known for his role as a holographic singer, Vic Fontaine in Star Trek's Deep Space Nine.
Vic. Another one of those characters that, like, when he first comes on, you kind of think he's ridiculous, and then you realize how important he is.
Exactly. Darren later starred opposite Star Trek William Shatner in ABC's T.J. Hooker. Irony. Time Tunnel Project TikTok was headed by General Haywood Kirk, played by Whit Basil, who was Mr. Lurie in The Trouble with Tribbles. A little trivia in his list, it was interesting. And then finally, I had an extra one that didn't get added to my list, and I saw this birthday, I was like, oh no, I gotta wish a special happy birthday to Dayton Ward, author who's done many a Star Trek books, including one of our favorites, Drastic Measure.
Mm-hmm. Great book.
And now I'm in the middle of his newest book, Discovery Somewhere to Belong. And that's his latest work and the latest addition to our Star Trek novels. And I definitely see a couple of references to some of the Star Trek novels in his latest novel. So, definitely happy birthday to Dayton Ward.
Yeah, I just want to like shout out to Dayton Ward. Like I will say that I think almost universally we have always enjoyed his Star Trek books. And of course he's a very prolific writer. He's one of these writers that like writes for everything and writes a million books at a time. But I'm particularly excited about this Somewhere to Belong book because this is actually our first Star Trek Discovery book in the 32nd century, right?
Second, I think.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, second.
Oh,
because,
you're right.
Because
yeah.
We also talk about Michael's year being out, but
I forgot.
Definitely,
yeah.
But this one also does a nice reference in going back. We talk about, they never talk about what happened in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And this one goes into Discovery's past.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's an interesting tie-in to the past and the present. So, Eric, in your best Paul impression, who's on your list?
Well, Paul would have announced probably much better than me a happy birthday, a fervent happy birthday to actress Michelle Phillips, singer and actress who played Janice Manheim in the Next Generation first season episode, We'll Always Have Paradise. Great episode, great actress. Happy birthday, Michelle. Happy birthday as well to Kim Rhodes, an actress from Portland, Oregon, my hometown, who appeared on Star Trek Voyager as Ensign Lindsay Ballard, a.k.a. the Kobali Jehetlenya, bad pronunciation, in the sixth-season episode, Ashes to Ashes. So, Kim Rhodes, thank you so much for being from Portland. Thank you for being on Star Trek. Happy birthday to you. Bertila DeMoss, we're also saying happy birthday to you. She is a Cuban-American actress who played Sakona in the Deep Space Nine second season episode, The Maquis, Part 1 and Part 2, and Marika Wilkara in the Star Trek Voyager sixth season episode, Survival Instinct. Bertila, I don't know if you know this or not, but in Star Trek Attack Wing, Sakona is one of the most valuable cards available. And in fact, your visage is very well known to anyone who plays that game because you give us extra weapon slots. You give us discounts on weapons. It's amazing. So whether you know it or not, Bertila DeMoss, thank you so much for being a huge part of Star Trek and a huge part of, like, a really, really ridiculously huge part of Star Trek Attack Wing. Happy birthday as well to Micah Gerears, who plays Felix in the Star Trek Discovery fourth season episode, The Examples. Happy birthday as well to Amrit Kaur, who appeared as Cadet Thera Sidhu in the Star Trek Short Treks episode, Ask Not. Love those Short Treks episodes, and Ask Not is another great one. And last on my list, but certainly not least, is the actor Carl Urban. I know you know who he is. He is from New Zealand, and he, of course, played Dr. Leonard McCoy in the Star Trek 2009 movies, all three of them, Star Trek 2009, Into Darkness, and Beyond. And I remember hearing a story where the original Bones was watching Carl Urban play his character, and he literally shed a tear because he felt like Carl Urban was doing the character so much justice along the way. He was just doing such a kick-ass job, and I don't think there's anybody on this podcast that would disagree with that supposition of DeForest Kelly's, that Carl Urban just did a great job picking up the role, carrying the torch. So Carl Urban, thank you so much for being such an awesome Bones and for like just embodying that kind of like DeForest Kelly energy all through it. So happy birthday to you.
Let me ask you guys, what, with the exception of Bones, what is your favorite character that he's played in the myriad of movies and characters that he has brought to life?
Well, I mean,
Lord of the Rings, Marvel,
yeah, I mean,
Judge Dredd.
Yeah, I mean, so here's my secret thing. Like, I secretly kind of love the newer Judge Dredd movie because I'm just a ridiculous Judge Dredd fan, and I'll pretty much love any version of Judge Dredd that you give me. So I actually loved the fact that he got to play Judge Dredd, and that I felt like he did a pretty decent job at it, I guess. When I saw him in Lord of the Rings, I just hit the ceiling. I was like, you gotta be kidding me. He is Éomer. Like, they're going to use him as one of these. I mean, Éomer is like a side character in some ways in Tolkien's book, but like, he's still a really important character. And the fact that they brought him in and he did such a kick-ass job in those movies, that's my personal favorite role of his outside of Star Trek.
Well, what about you, Charles?
On that one, I'm going to have to agree with Eric. I haven't really gotten into the Dredd stuff, but other than the board games, but definitely Lord of the Rings.
Well, I got to tell you, I'm a huge, I mean, I love Stallone, and I just, Stallone was Dredd to me. I couldn't get into Carl's version of Dredd. I like the over
yeah,
the top
sure.
Stallone.
I mean, that original Dredd movie was so cool.
I mean, I just love it. So, you know, but if you want to see him completely on bones, like, you have to watch him in The Boys. And
yeah,
you'll be shocked at the words that come out of his mouth and the way he is on The Boys. It's completely, it's like the mirror universe version of Bones. So I just wanted to throw that out there. And I wanted to ask you guys, the last birthday that we had, Amit Kaur, are you a little bit surprised or disappointed that we did not see her as an engineer on Strange New Worlds? Didn't you feel like they were setting that up to happen?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I kind of feel like it was almost like a missed opportunity where they should have brought her in. I mean, she did such a great job in that. And so I would completely agree with you. I would have loved to have seen her continue on.
Yeah,
like, she's not a chief engineer. And I guess maybe that's what it is like in the shows, we mostly get the chiefs of each thing, right? We get the chief engineer, we get the CMO, we get the captain and like all the bridge officers and stuff. So the fact that she wasn't the CMO, did that, or not the CMO, sorry, the chief engineer, did that work against her for being able to show up later because there's only so much screen time that they can give to, you know, ancillary characters?
Yeah, we only get 10 episodes, unfortunately.
Yeah, but she was great in like the little bit that she was in. So I would have loved to have seen more. And talk about representation, like to have an Indian American engineer on the ship, like kicking ass. That would be awesome, right?
That I was expecting it, but we didn't get it. Oh well. So we're gonna move on with our birthdays. I've got a few, but there's some good ones. Speaking of Carl Urban playing Bones. We have his counterpart, kind of. We want to say happy birthday to Zachary Quinto, who portrayed, of course, Mr. Spock in Star Trek 2009 Into Darkness and Star Trek Beyond. And I think that Zachary and Carl had an awesome on-screen presence together. They really got that Bones-Spock bond going on, and I really enjoyed it. So happy birthday to Zachary Quinto. Here's a favorite. Jason Isaacs. Yes, happy birthday to Jason Isaacs, British actor who portrayed Mirror Universe Captain Gabriel Lorca in the first season of Star Trek Discovery. And that's important because we've never seen Prime Universe Lorca outside of the Dayton Ward book, which was fantastic, I want to add, by the way. And we were all stunned when we found out he was from the Mirror Universe. We knew something was wrong with him. Everyone on the podcast agreed with that. But my God, I never thought of that. That was like so brilliant when they did that. So happy birthday to Jason Isaacs. The next one, I want to say happy birthday to Gary Graham, who played two roles in Star Trek. He played the Ocampa Dr. Tanis in Star Trek Voyager's second season episode, Cold Fire, and Vulcan Ambassador Saval on all four seasons of Star Trek Enterprise. Now, was he a stalagmite or wasn't he, Eric? I don't remember.
Well, first of all, Jim, it's called Sirenite. And no, Saval was not.
He was not. And I have to mention that he also played in one of my TV shows from the 90s, Alienation. He played just Matthew Sykes in Alienation, which was an outstanding yet short-lived series. So happy birthday to Gary Graham.
Well, yeah, and Jim, let's not forget about, I mean, there are a couple of other, like, cool credits that Gary Graham has, I think, that bear, like, mentioning. One is that he has done some fan Star Trek stuff. So he was in Prelude to Axanar as Saval. So he not only did that officially, but did that in the fan canon. And then he's also in a band, right? He's in a band, like a Star Trek band or something.
Isn't he part of Sons of Kirk?
That's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. He is.
So it was pretty cool. There was like that day that Charles and I went to go see Picard season one after the show was over. I went out to a bar afterwards where Sharrock Lofton was hanging out and Gary Graham was hanging out. And I got a chance to chat with him just a little bit on the side. Nothing like too much, but like in a group of friends who were all standing in a bar just chatting with one another. And he seemed like a pretty cool guy. So, yeah.
Yeah, so happy birthday to Gary Graham. And the last birthday, non-Klingon birthday, because I've got some really good Klingons here. Well, the last non-Klingon birthday is James Callis, who's a British actor who portrayed Maurice Picard and the illusionary Starfleet psychiatrist in his image in Star Trek Picard episodes, The Stargazer, Monsters, and Hide and Seek. But I think most people would know him from another role. I think most people might know him as Boltar from Battlestar Galactica 2004, the reimagined Battlestar Galactica.
He's amazing.
All right.
He is absolutely freaking amazing in that role. I just will say that, like, Baltar was one of my favorite characters from that show. He's just you want to like him, but you hate him. And you know he's slimy, but you kind of like him. This is so perfect.
He was a great character. He was kind of reminiscent of the original Boltar.
He was.
From the original
Galactica, I will say that the original Baltar had a look and a way that he was written that made him seem sinister right from the beginning. This particular version of Baltar, I really liked because it felt more insidious. It was like, as the show went on, you started to discover how bad he really was, rather than him just kind of being revealed as a, quote, bad guy at the beginning, you know?
You wanted to like him. You wanted
you
to
did.
Trust him.
You wanted
you
to.
But you knew you couldn't.
Right,
you know?
Because he was all out for himself. Ah! I loved him. He was such a good character.
Yeah, he was great. And I always save the Klingons for last, and I've got two pretty good ones here to wrap up our birthdays. The first one, we want to say happy birthday to Mark Warden, the Canadian actor who played none other than Alexander Rozhenko in Deep Space Nine, six-season episodes, The Sons and Daughters, and You Are Cordially Invited. For those of you who don't know who Alexander Rozhenko is, who is he, Eric?
Well, he is the one and only son of Worf, son of Moog. So, he is the progeny out there who, in my opinion, Worf has done a terrible job of being a father to.
And, in fact, when he shows up on Picard Season 3, he actually –
part of his introduction is House of Rozhenko.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly.
Yeah, which I thought was pretty interesting because it's almost like he invented his own little house there, which I think is cool. Like I'm into that. I'm not sure that the Klingon High Council would recognize that house, but you know, it's cool.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. And the last one I think is the best. I fell in love with her, and I was so devastated with what happened to her. We want to say happy birthday and kapla to the one and only Susie Plaxton. And she's an American actress who appeared in four different roles in three Star Trek series. First, she played Dr. Salar, who was a Vulcan, in the TNG episode The Schizoid Man. She also appeared as a female version of Q on Star Trek Voyager's The Q and the Gray. She played an excellent Andorian, Tara, in the Enterprise episode Ceasefire, which was great. But the ultimate character that she played was on TNG as Kalar, mate of Worf, in the episode The Emissary and Reunion. And then she appeared again as in a flashback. Tell you what, when they killed her off in Reunion, oh my God, I pissed.
Yeah. You're like, at last, Worf has like a chance at love, and then it just doesn't work out.
And it didn't work out, as she was such a great character. She was a great foil for Worf and all his silly Klingon rituals. And he put him in his place. And she was a great character, great counterbalance for him. So happy birthday to Susie Plaxton. All right, guys, that wraps up our Star Trek birthdays. And now it's time for Star Trek.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Incoming transmission.
Enter authorization code.
Command codes verified. Define parameters of program.
Level 9 authorization required.
Specify parameters.
Transfer of data is complete.
Blank alert. Blank alert.
All right, guys. All of the stories that we're about to discuss are extremely abbreviated and can be found in their entirety on our Facebook page. Eric, you want to get us started?
I absolutely do. You can now watch all of Star Trek Strange New Worlds Season 1 for free on YouTube if you are in the United States. That's right. Season 2 of Star Trek Strange New Worlds arrives on June 15th, and Paramount Plus is building momentum by making the entire first season available to stream for free on YouTube for a limited time. Watch the whole season for free. They will be available on YouTube until Friday, June 30th, midnight Pacific time. So if you have not had a chance to check out the latest Star Trek available, you should do it. If you're outside the United States, I'm not sure how to do that aside from finding a friend who has a VPN connection. But like, if you're in the U.S., you can just go to YouTube, man. It's right there. Super easy. I think that's pretty cool.
And definitely. There's a link on our Facebook page that will link you directly to the YouTube video. So you don't even have to search for them. Just go to Trek Talking, go to the article, and all the links for all 10 episodes can be found there. I'll take you right to them.
Could we make it any easier? I don't think so. But speaking of Strange New Worlds, Charles has something else to inform us of.
Yes. Star Trek Strange New Worlds costume designer on adapting Lower Deck costume from animation to live action. Strange New Worlds costume designer Bernadette Croft about what might require in the transition and what the blank colored animation clothes would look like when they're fitted to real human bodies. The key things to consider were we going to use the micro print on uniforms? Should the fabric and colors be the same as Strange New World uniforms? interestingly, when you see the animation, the color of the pants is charcoal. They're not black. And also the soles of the boots have a distinct logo. Even the way Mariner wears her uniform in this nonchalant way, she has her sleeves rolled. These are very important references for me, and I always had to take note of these particular things.
Mm-hmm.
We're definitely working hard to get the costuming just to have it right through this one episode.
But isn't it cool how, like, you move from animation, which is, I don't know, I guess more general? Like, you're not, when you're watching an animated show, you're not going to look at the detail of the printed pattern on the uniform of the person you're, right? Like, you're just not going to do that. But
or they're not going to do, or they're not going to create it.
Why would they? Because nobody cares. It's all about the story. But when you get into the 4K world of live action, you actually care about what pattern is printed on the uniform. So I think that's pretty cool.
Yep, definitely.
Yeah, they even,
so,
if you saw the brief clip, they even got Boimler's purple hair, only his hair isn't as purple as it is on the show, but he does have purple highlights in his hair.
I know, but that is interesting, right? Like, there's a whole, like, consternation from Star Trek fans about how purple his hair is or isn't.
Yeah. So, Eric, I think you want to talk about Strange New Worlds, too.
I do, because Strange New Worlds episode titles, which we have now seen for Season 2, they actually hint at maybe what's happening in Season 2. Perhaps the most anticipated event in Strange New Worlds Season 2 is the crossover episode with Star Trek Lower Decks, which will be in Episode 7 called Those Old Scientists. The title is a callback to a joke in Lower Decks' Season 1 finale, No Small Parts, when Commander Jack Ransom, played by Jerry O'Connell, referred to TOS as Those Old Scientists. A sly wink at that abbreviation for Star Trek, the original series, in particular, Episode 10, Hegemony. The Gorn are major villains in Strange New Worlds, and their civilization is called the Gorn Hegemony. This strongly infers that the Gorn will be back in the Strange New Worlds Season 2 finale, Episode 2, Ad Astra Per Aspera, is a Latin phrase meaning to the stars, through difficulties, which could be the origin story of one of the Enterprise's crew members. Strange New Worlds, Episode 8, Under the Cloak of War, ominously hints at another conflict brewing with the Klingons. Strange New Worlds, Season 2 premieres June 15th on Paramount Plus. And I just wanted to, like, dig into this. We have a little bit of time, so I feel like I'm going to do this. Season 2, we have all 10 episode titles here. So, number 1, The Broken Circle. The Astra Per Aspera, which we just read about. Episode 3, Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow. Ooh, that's interesting. Episode 4, Among the Lotus Eaters. Episode 5, Charades. Or charades, depending on how you pronounce it. Episode 6, Lost in Translation. Episode 7, Those Old Scientists. There's your TOS. Episode 8, Under the Cloak of War. Episode 9, Subspace Rhapsody. And Episode 10, Hegemony, which could not be more Gorn if I had fashioned it myself. So there is no question we are going to get some Gorn in Season 2, and I'm pretty excited about that. I know we had an entire episode a little while ago, maybe Charles knows which episode, but that we sort of headcanoned a bunch of Gorn stuff after that first season episode that featured the Gorn. And so I am particularly excited to actually bring the Gorn back as part of Strange New Worlds. I feel like I like the new Gorn. I like the fact that they're not the original rubber suit, you know, rainbow eye Gorn, and they're not the poorly computer animated Enterprise Gorn. They're like somewhere in between. So we actually now have cool Gorn, right, guys?
Yeah. Well, and if you want a bit of a laugh, our friend Andy Bray just released a new video about the Gorn by Chekhov's point of view, because he gets to kind of look back and find Kirk and find out what happened with Pike. It's like, wait a minute, how did Pike get such cool, vicious Gorn and Kirk, who just boasts about fighting this thing? And it's like, wait a minute, was that an old Gorn that Kirk fought?
Very old Gorn.
Yeah.
And I would like to think that Andy got that from our Gorn show. Because...
I was wondering.
I'll tell you guys, I've watched that video 3 times, and I listened to it a 4th time, and I never stopped laughing. I think that is one of the funniest skits that he has done to date. And
absolutely.
In fact,
yeah,
you guys can find it on our Facebook page. And on Monday, July 10th, we're going to premiere it right here live on the podcast. We're going to have a Checking In with Chekhov special, and Andy Bray is going to be here live to talk about that Gorn sketch. So definitely check it out and definitely tune in on July 10th. I even told him, I said, that's the best. You nailed it. I never stopped laughing. Hilarious.
Yeah.
It's just perfect. Perfect, perfect.
All right, Jim, well, why don't you tell us what we can get for our $5.99 a month with Paramount Plus?
Yeah, so I have this Paramount Plus bundle, and I keep hearing about the prices are going to go up, but my price actually went down with Showtime. So anyways, here we go. This story is, with Paramount Plus limited time $5.99 a month Showtime bundle, catch up on Yellow Jackets, Star Trek, and much more. I have already caught up on Yellow Jackets, by the way. Pretty cool. B, you can cash in on a discounted subscription of Paramount Plus bundled with Showtime. When Paramount Plus debuts its rebranding as Paramount Plus with Showtime on Tuesday, June 27th, the premium ad-free plan will cost $11.99 per month, a $2 increase from the current price. The essential plan, which has ads and doesn't include Showtime, will go up in price as well to $5.99 per month, a $1 bump up over the current price. But if you act fast, you can get 3 months of the premium plan for the monthly price as as an essential one, which is pretty cool. I've been a subscriber of the Paramount Plus since it was CBS All Access. I didn't add Showtime until became part of Paramount. Now I have Showtime because I have it bundled with my Paramount Plus. And I tell you, it's a pretty good deal. It really is. They got some great stuff, and you can watch some cool Star Trek. So, Paul.
Jim, can I just, like, reiterate the thing that we iterated, like, 3 years ago, which was that $6 a month. Okay, $6 a month. If you watch just Star Trek Discovery, if that's all you watch, 50 cents per episode, is that worth it? Do you spend more than 50 cents on something that you don't like? To me, that is just, like, why wouldn't you pay for it?
Well, Paramount Plus, of all the streaming services, is the one that I watch the most. 1923 is outstanding. 1823 was even better. There are some great shows on Paramount Plus. And throw Showtime in with Yellow Jackets, and you can't lose. And you also get access to your local station, which up to now is the only streaming network that gives you local access to your local news. So that alone, if you've cut the cord and you want to know what's going on locally, that alone makes it worth $5.99.
Didn't they just recently relaunch all 10 Star Trek movies on Paramount Plus as well?
Yep.
Yes, as of June 1st, all of the Star Trek movies are now available, including
the new 4K Star Trek The Motion Picture Director's Cut back on Paramount Plus. So you can watch
$6 a month, you guys. Character. Like my latte, my here's what I order at Starbucks, almond milk mocha. When I get an almond milk mocha, it costs me about $6.50. So about the same as like an entire month of Paramount Plus. Unbelievable.
And we're not getting paid from Paramount.
No, we're not.
That.
No. This has nothing to do with that. It's just like, why wouldn't you do it? I wish Paramount was listening right now. Yeah.
And Paramount called me up and said, hey, Jim, we want to pay you. And I'd be like, okay, great, pay me.
Because we believe.
But no, I'm not getting paid at all. I'm just trying to pass along to you guys, you know, the tremendous deal bargain that you have with Paramount Plus. That's all. That's all I'm saying. And Eric, because Paul's not here, I guess Charles is going to wrap us up.
Okay. Continuing our Strange New World, second season two, Carol Kane on Funny Women at Starship Engineering. Engineers and being yanked into sci-fi. Playing
Palia? Yeah. I'm going to guess. Palia?
The Enterprise new engineer in Star Trek Strange New World is Carol Kane's introduction to the world of sci-fi. Kane said she's been yanked into the sci-fi realm. She's just been having a ball, calling it a great new discovery. First means speaking in the franchise's signature language of techno jargon and the series veterans called Technobabble. Kane shares her secret to getting these lines out. Repetition, she says. That's it. For me, I just have to run over and over and over and over until out and my brain could wrap them around the babble and make it seem like something I'm knowledgeable about. As we said before, Strange New World Season 2 premieres Thursday, June 15th on Paramount Plus. I believe it's in some of the other hemisphere.
Well,
yeah,
we will be discussing the episode just like we've always had. So on the 15th, we'll be watching it. The week later, we'll be discussing it.
Yeah, so Charles was cutting in and out just a little bit there, but like the crux of the article was that Carol Kane is extremely excited about playing an engineer. She got yanked into this world of being a Star Trek engineer, and one of the most challenging things that she found was that it says technobabble in the article, but I'm going to say treknobabble, right? Like all those words that Geordi would have iterated with no problem that we all like to follow. Those are the hardest parts for her to figure out. And so she just has to repeat to be able to deliver her lines in a meaningful way. So I'm very curious, how do you guys think that they're going to use Carol Kane? Like, will she be comedy relief? Is the engineer, I mean, in some ways, Scotty was a little bit of the comedy relief, right? He would do things like, and I know one of Jim's favorite scenes is Star Trek V, where he bonks his head on the bulkhead after having said that he knows the ship like the back of his hand, right? So is it going to be that kind of a thing with Carol Kane, or will it be a slightly less, you know, slapstick and a little bit more sophisticated?
Or are we going to get a Jet Reno?
Jet Reno. Yeah.
Yeah, Jet Reno. I think Jet Reno was so popular on Discovery that they decided, you know, we're going to have a Jet Reno type character, and we'll have to wait and see.
So she's there to be kind of like grumpy and a foil to whatever's going on in the scene, but like she's actually really smart and gives good advice on the side.
Well, I will tell you guys this. Bruce Horak, who played Emmer in season one, at Trek Long Island, said that he, as an actor, may be back on Strange New World.
What?
Yes, but not as Emmer.
Whoa. Jim, you have not yet revealed this to us as your co-host. So like an underling of Carol Kane?
So, you know, we'll have to see. We'll have to see
Dude,
what happens with that.
That would be awesome.
And he did sign an NDA, so he can't confirm anything. He just said may. Take that for what it's worth. Take that for what it's worth. But, so as Charles was saying, our schedule is going to start to get normalized again. And what that means is next week we're going to be doing Book Nook. We're going to be talking about the Star Trek Discovery, Star Trek Strange New Worlds book, High Ground. That'll be next Thursday. Next Thursday happens to be the premiere of Strange New Worlds as well. We will be a week behind on our Strange New Worlds review. So every Thursday we will review last Thursday's episode, and that's because we have a lot of listeners around the globe that don't see the episode until Friday. So we'll be a week behind on our reviews, and they'll be on every Thursday. Will be an episode review, Star Trek birthdays, and Star Trek news, just like this podcast was tonight. However, any special shows that we have, like Chris Tonight, or for instance, on the 19th, I'm going to be talking with Stephanie, Rachel, and Edwin about the awesome Trek Long Island. Any shows like that that are Book Nook, Comic Corner, or special guests will be on Mondays because we just can't fit that much into a Thursday if we have episodes to review. So any special shows that come along will be on a Monday. All right. So that will be our schedule going forward. And you can always find our schedule on our Facebook page. At the top, under events, you'll see all the events that are scheduled. And as soon as I schedule a guest or something like that, I try to get it posted on the Facebook page as soon as possible so you guys know when it's going to be. Okay? So that will be our schedule moving ahead, at least for the next 11 weeks. I don't know what's going to happen. After that, they haven't come out with a schedule yet and told us what's going to happen after Strange New Worlds or when it will be. But for the next 11 weeks, that will be our schedule. All right, guys. So I want to say thank you so much to Chris Naylor for coming on and sharing his stories with us. It was a blast to talk to Chris. Well, thank you so much to Chris for hanging out with us. And thank you so much to Eric for hanging out with us tonight and Trek Talking. Thank you, Eric.
I absolutely had so much fun, you guys.
It's always, and it flies right by, doesn't it?
It does. It just cruises by. And Chris was awesome because, like, I'll just say that we love talking to fellow nerds on the podcast because they sort of understand our jam and, like, our rhythm and stuff. And Chris was perfect. He was just an awesome guest.
And when Chris was talking about meeting Jonathan Frakes, he sent me a picture of Jonathan Frakes signing his Riker figure. I don't know, did I post that in our chat? I don't know if I did or not.
No.
But he was so excited to meet Frakes that he actually has a picture of Frakes signing his Riker figure, which I thought, wow, that is so cool. So thank you so much to Chris. And also thank you to our very own Charles for hanging out and Trek Talking with us. Thank you so much, Charles.
Oh, thank you. It's always fun.
And just as a reminder, you know, Star Trek fans are the best fans, guys. You better believe that. Please, everybody, stay safe and be good to each other. Hailing frequencies are closed. Good night, everybody.
Hey, y'all.
Live long and prosper.
Let's see what's out there.